People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
At present, there's something around $10 trillion in outstanding home loan debt in this country. $10 trillion. As a result of the crisis, the whole system for financing home mortgages has to be overhauled. And in a recent speech to Congress, President Obama called for the slow death of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, I'm speaking with Barry Zegas, Director of Housing Policy for Consumer Federation of America. Barry also consults with foundations, nonprofits, and others through his firm Zegas & Associates. Prior to founding the firm in 2006, Zegas was Senior Vice President at Fannie Mae, where he led community lending initiatives, including specialized mortgage product development, to increase homeownership opportunities. He was president of the National Low-Income Housing Coalition from 1984 until joining Fannie Mae in 1993, where he led the policy development and advocacy efforts that resulted in the low-income housing tax credit in 1986. Barry, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Certainly. Now, perhaps I'm revealing too much about my age when I say that I grew up knowing that buying a house was a big part of the American dream. This is not the case for my sons, who are in their 20s and suspect that they may always be renters. Briefly, why are we now being told that home ownership isn't for everyone?
Well, homeownership has never really been for everyone, but it's been more accessible in the past than it is today. And the reason is that we've come through a period of both regulatory and market failure in which homeownership became a commodity that was marketed to people through irresponsible mortgage products and promises of ever-rising house prices, creating a bubble in the value of homes across the country and particularly in certain markets. So that today we're seeing financial institutions and regulators reacting, I think, overreacting to these excesses in the market in the early 2000s and making it much, much harder for everyday working people to buy a house.
So perhaps this is a pendulum swinging, is what you're suggesting?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. You know, we went from a period in the 1980s when it was very common to require 20% down and very, very high credit quality in order to get a mortgage, into the 1990s when Fannie Mae, primary market lenders like Bank of America, Chase, and others experimented with finding ways to make funding available on a responsible and sustainable basis to working people by using lower down payments, alternative forms of credit verification, and so on, and had a tremendous amount of success. Coming into the 2000s, however, that pendulum swung way, way over with the non-regulated Wall Street banking sector plunging headlong into the securitization of mortgages that often had very unstable features like interest-only, pick-a-pay, and adjustable rates that put many homeowners into homes they really couldn't afford to sustain. And now we're seeing the overreaction to that in the form of much tighter credit standards and a general high degree of difficulty for everyday people to buy a home.
Let's talk about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac for a minute. What do they actually do, and in what ways do they influence the mortgage industry?
So Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are very simply the people who buy mortgages after they've been made to everyday consumers by the lender on your corner. Lenders make these mortgages with an expectation of selling them off in order to replenish their capital and make more loans, and also to reduce their own risk to the credit exposure that mortgage lending involves. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac either hold these mortgages in their portfolios, or they package them into securities that they guarantee and sell to investors throughout the world. As a consequence of their actions, they've created a very, very deep well of liquidity for mortgage finance on terms that are standardized across the country.
So I understand that the mortgage market has benefited from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. How does that translate to the individual homeowner?
Well, first of all, it means individual homeowners find mortgage terms basically the same all over the country when they're looking for standard conventional mortgage financing. There was a time when if you got a home in California, you might have terms, mortgage terms, very different than those that you would find in New York. Second, the mortgage rates have been leveled across the country because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are such big, big players in the market that they have forced down prices to a standard across the country that's been very beneficial to consumers. And finally, because of the size of the market that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have supported over the years, consumers in America have ready access to long-term fixed-rate financing, which is something consumers around the world do not have access to on a regular basis, and they can get forward rate locks on their mortgages 30, 60, 90 days, so that when you're seeking a home, you can lock in your interest rate and know what you're going to have to pay instead of having to wait till you get to the closing table to find out. All of these benefits have been tremendously helpful to consumers, and over the years, the influence of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac has helped drive mortgage rates down to levels that would be much, much higher without their intervention. Unfortunately, in the latter stages of the housing bubble and the financial crisis that followed, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac tried to recapture market share in the mortgage market and began underwriting mortgages with much looser terms, and it has caused them both to fail and be taken into conservatorship.
So that is why the government is taking over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Well, they're now operating under what's called conservatorship. So they're technically still private companies, but they're being operated in a form of protection, if you will, a kind of modified bankruptcy in order to sort themselves out and rebuild their capital. Whether they'll be allowed to do that or not, of course, is a very open question. As you noted in the beginning of the webcast, President Obama himself has gotten behind the notion that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac as specific institutions should be phased out. What's still up for grabs is what, if anything, will replace them.
So there are three options that the Obama administration has proposed as possibilities, and it seems like the prevailing political sentiment is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac should be eliminated. Can you tell us about these three options?
The administration in February published a white paper after many months of outreach, consultation, and research, and laid out, as you say, three potential options for the future of the mortgage finance system. The understood presumption on all three options is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, as they're presently structured, would be in some way unwound, right, and cease to exist as they currently do. Under option one, the federal government's involvement with the mortgage market would be completely limited only to the Federal Housing Administration, which insures mortgages, and that portion of the mortgage market that it served would be pretty tightly constricted into a small part. Option two is a kind of a middle ground where option one would still continue. In other words, FHA would insure mortgages for a very specific portion of the population. And there would be some kind of backup federal guarantee, federal engagement at times to step in at times when private capital was not fulfilling the needs of American homebuyers. And then option three would be the FHA for one group of homeowners, primarily those of low and moderate income or those with very constrained credit and wealth characteristics, and then a second level of federal involvement, which would extend to a larger part of the market, but would be structured very differently than Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were. In all three scenarios, people of wealth, people buying the most expensive homes, would have to deal with the private sector on their own, as in fact they have done for as long as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have been around. There's always been a part of the mortgage market in which they cannot participate, and that part of the market has relied entirely on private financing.
So if Fannie and Freddie are eliminated outright and there aren't any products that provide these kinds of guarantees, what might it mean for home buyers when it comes to borrowing rates and access to capital, for instance?
Well, regardless of what happens, the future holds the following things for home buyers. Number one, mortgages are going to be more expensive because people are charging more for the risks they perceive mortgages to include, and any form of guarantee is going to have to be paid for. The guarantees that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac provided, because they had implicit backing from the U.S. government, were not fully priced, and as a consequence, the government has had to invest money in them and gotten nothing back in return. So mortgages are going to be more expensive. Credit terms are going to be tighter. That's not necessarily a bad thing. The market had gotten to the point where underwriting was being done very poorly, if at all, and that's one of the problems that's led to the current situation. And we're going to see the potential loss of long-term fixed-rate mortgages if there is no adequate and effective substitute for the form of federal backing that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have represented. Investors generally, and banks in particular, would much rather make adjustable-rate mortgages with short time periods so that consumers have to bear the risks of interest rate changes. In the United States, the presence of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac has helped ensure that consumers can get long-term fixed-rate mortgages, which are by far a safer alternative for consumers. So the biggest risk of eliminating Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac without providing anything to substitute for them is that consumers will no longer have access to long-term level payment self-amortizing mortgages that they can prepay at any time. The other risk that might that we worried about is that a system that doesn't have federal support of any extensive kind will end up being dominated by the four very large banks that have already grown larger as a result of the crisis, and that they will dominate the mortgage market as they dominate so many other parts of the financial landscape. And that will drive small community banks, credit unions, regional banks out of the business of being independent mortgage providers. That will mean less consumer choice, it will mean higher prices, and it will not be a good thing because it will increase the systemic risk of these very large institutions.
Very interesting. Now, the bulk of Fannie and Freddie's mortgage activity has been in the single-family arena, about $400 billion, as I understand it, in mortgages. But a smaller slice of what they do, about $15 billion, has been multifamily apartment lending, and some of it affordable apartment developments. Has that portfolio of loans experienced the same kind of default rates?
That's a terrific question, and the fact is that the multifamily businesses at both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which have traditionally funded larger apartment buildings, but most of them at rents that are affordable to people certainly below the area median income, those businesses have performed extremely well. They've had very low default and delinquency rates. The companies have, in fact, increased their share of that market because other investors have fled the real estate sector, and their loans have held up much, much better than those that were privately financed through commercial mortgage-backed securities.
So what happens to apartment lending activity if Fannie and Freddie are eliminated? Is it conceivable that private market lending could pick up all of that activity, or would there be some continued role for government?
Well, in the options the government has proposed in their paper in February, they very, very briefly noted the importance of stable financing for affordable rental housing, but they really didn't offer much of an idea about what to do about it, except to say that FHAs, the Federal Housing Administration's mortgage insurance programs for rental housing, should be modernized, updated, and made more flexible and attractive in the marketplace. For those who work in the field, that's a prospect that isn't very heartwarming. FHA, while it can be very, very useful in new construction, is not at all helpful in the preservation field. It's a very one-size-fits-all kind of program, and it's been difficult to operate. The private sector alone certainly does provide a significant amount of financing for multifamily housing, but it does so on a very unsteady and uncertain basis. Private investors go in and out of the market at all times. Sometimes there's a lot of capital available, and sometimes there's very little. What Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac did to this market starting in the mid-1980s was ensure that there was a steady source of capital, maybe not always at the best price, but always available to any lender that was seeking a secondary market source of liquidity for their lending. If Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are dissolved and nothing similar is put in their place, then multifamily financing is also likely to see higher prices, tighter credit, and a much less dependable access to the capital markets.
So what happens now? The administration has its proposal. Congress appears to have several bills that it's considering. Are they similar? And how might all of this get reconciled? And when do you think that would happen?
Right now, Congress is trying to digest the administration's proposal and come to terms with its own very conflicted feelings about the mortgage system. On the one hand, Congress has exhibited a significant amount of interest in eliminating Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac as they're currently constituted. There's a lot of anger and resentment that the companies cost the taxpayers a significant amount of money through the conservatorship and the need to back up their guarantees. And there's always been an undercurrent of resentment about the companies because they were big and powerful and not within the Congress's control. The House of Representatives is beginning to consider bills through the House Financial Services Committee, but it's very unclear whether the members there are ready to take on sort of wholesale reform efforts or instead will opt for some small bites, as they call them, of reforms of the way Fannie and Freddie are currently run. And so the prospect in the House is a little unclear, although the Republican leadership has said that this is a high priority for them to reform the mortgage finance system and eliminate Fannie and Freddie. In the Senate, the chairman of the Banking Committee, Tim Johnson, has said, and Congressman Shelby, the ranking Senator Shelby, the ranking minority member, has affirmed that they intend to take a long time to consider what to do, and that they're going to hold an extensive series of hearings in order to explore both the issues and the opportunities that this represents. And so I think it's very, very unlikely that Congress will reach any kind of conclusion before 2013.
Barry, many of our listeners build affordable apartment housing, and they're interested in the potential options for multifamily financing. I know you worked with the National Housing Conference on a white paper that suggested important principles for dealing with this portfolio. Can you share a few of the key ideas in that paper?
Well, the National Housing Conference's paper really looked at what the market for housing finance for multifamily was and reached the conclusion that without the form of federal support that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have provided, it will be very difficult to guarantee long-term access to dependable capital for the developers and owners of affordable rental housing. So the paper proposes really the establishment of a form of federal guarantee that would be paid for by those who use it, and that the guarantee would reassure investors that the securities that they're buying have the backing of a catastrophic insurance fund, and to focus that support primarily on the market that serves low and moderate income people.
Now, is that paper available on the NHC.org website?
It certainly should be.
And are there other places we can refer people to go for more information on this topic?
Absolutely. If you go to the Consumer Federation of America's website and consumerfed.org and look under the housing/GSE section, there are several important pieces there. A white paper that I authored in 2009, the submission that CFA made to the Treasury and HUD during their research last summer into these issues, as well as a copy of a paper that I participated in along with many others in a mortgage finance working group sponsored by the Center for American Progress that proposes a very comprehensive approach to a new restructuring of the mortgage finance system. All of those would be very good sources for your listeners.
Excellent. Barry, thanks so much for all this great information today.
You're very welcome.
Barry Zegas is Director of Housing Policy for Consumer Federation of America and also the president of Zegas and Associates, where he consults with foundations and nonprofits. I'm Joanne Green. For more information, go to edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.